Welcome, and thank you for joining us for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. This week, we are excited to welcome NAHU CEO Janet Troutwine for a special discussion on the Association Health Plan final rule that was released by the Trump administration on Tuesday. We will address how these plans will work, the impact the rule has on AHPs already in existence, how NAHU helped to influence the rulemaking process, and what you should tell your clients and prospective clients about the rule. Before we begin, as a reminder, please take a moment to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and to rate us. The podcast is posted every Friday on these channels ahead of being distributed through the Washington Update, giving you a head start on your weekly healthcare happy hour. The big whoop for the Washington Update podcast this week was the release of the final Association Health Plan regulation by the Trump administration on Tuesday. Janet, can you provide a brief synopsis of what this rule will do?
Well, thank you, Dan. Basically, this changes the existing regulations on association health plans, because we do have association health plans today, to allow an additional way for AHPs to be formed and to operate. And I'm going to expand on that in just a little while, but I just want to stress that this is an extra way, a new way, and it doesn't replace the old way. Some of the main things that it does is it changes the definition of a bona fide association. This is actually a really big change. Currently, an association, there are a lot of requirements to be considered bona fide. Groups within it have to share a common interest. But this expands that by saying that groups have two ways of becoming one of these new AHPs. They can either be in the same trade, industry, line of business, or profession. And that's actually pretty broad in what they consider those things to be. The final rule defines that pretty extensively. It can be regardless of where they're located. And then there is a second option that allows them to be based on location. But when I say on location, this is not just, you know, everyone that lives in Washington, D.C. It's employer groups situated in Washington, D.C. So it wouldn't be just individual people who live here. It's also different from the current rule. In today's current situation, groups are counted based on the size employer that they are inside an association health plan, and this would count them all together as a large group so that they would be subject to large group, getting out of things like modified community rating and the essential benefits package and so forth, and a lot of other things and advantages that large groups have. And then, very importantly, in this new rule, individual employers nor any of the people that work for them could not be rated on health status. There are other ways that employers could be rated differently inside an AHP, but health status is not one of them. And then the most significant thing really is that it allows working owners or self-employed people, even when they don't have a non-owner employee, to be considered both the employer and the employee inside the AHP. So this is something that a lot of self-employed people are very excited about.
Thanks, Janet. Can you give us some background on the rule and what brought us here?
Well, in October, the president issued an executive order that had three components to it. Part of it was it was looking for an expansion on health reimbursement arrangements and to allow them to do more than they can today. The other part of it had to do with expanding the short-term policies. And then the other one beyond that had to do with AHPs and expanding the way that they could be offered. Now, you have to look at this coming out. First, you know, you might want to look at it from why did the president do this? And was it for political reasons? And I'm sure that there were some political reasons for doing it. Republicans have been campaigning on expanding, particularly association health plans, for years and years and years. In fact, I find it hard to remember a time when they were not campaigning from that for the entire 20 years that I've been in Washington, D.C. So this is considered a big win for Republicans. But I will say that the final rule was not created, and I've read through the entire thing with a political perspective. It really was actually put together pretty thoughtfully with considerations of what would actually be helpful to people in the market. And then just to put this in the context, why would people be more interested in it now? If we look at the overall rate of the sponsoring of employers' sponsored coverage, particularly small employers, it has dropped. which means that some small employers may feel they've been priced out of coverage. And very importantly, the individual market, as we all know, has become much more unstable in many parts of the country. In fact, in most parts of the country, and many self-employed people feel that they're absolutely priced out of coverage and they need another alternative. So all of that really provided a compelling reason why it was done at this particular time.
How will the association health plans work for employers, and what should NAHU members be telling their clients and prospective clients who may be interested in these arrangements?
Okay, so I'm not going to get into every technicality, but I want to get into a few of these. So we should talk a little bit about how these would be structured. And I will say that a lot of people have been very worried about this expansion of the bona fide association and would it create an environment for bad actors and people to create sham plans. And so I want to talk a little bit about how the definition of a bona fide association is addressed. First of all, it does allow a bona fide association to be created for the primary purpose of offering insurance. And this is very, very different than what the rule was before, which required that an association's primary purpose be for something else besides offering insurance. But the final rule did add an additional provision that was not present in the proposed rule, and that is that these associations must offer at least one other service for members that didn't have anything to do with health insurance or other employee benefits. So, for example, it could be educational programs for members or something like that. Another thing to take into consideration relative to these plans is that state laws are not preempted. So they absolutely changed nothing from the original proposed rule relative to the authority of state regulators. States have regulatory authority today over both fully insured association health plans and self-funded plans. Most self-funded plans are not subject to, if they're not MIWAs, they're not subject to state regulatory authority, but MIWAs are, and most association health plans are structured as MIWAs, so that is retained. There was a provision in the final rule that said that the action of the state regulators in this regard was going to be watched very closely, and states that overdid using their regulatory authority and effectively preempted this opportunity from occurring would cause additional rules to come down. But I don't think that that's their intention. And it's stated throughout the rule over and over again. And then the other thing, a couple of other things to be aware of, there are staggered implementation dates that are in here for the express purpose of allowing the state regulators to create whatever is the correct opportunity in their particular states for making this work. For so fully insured plans, could start as early as September 1st of 2018. That's pretty fast. Of course, they have to be structured first for that to happen. More on that in a few minutes. And then for existing associations that already have AHPs in place, they could begin a self-insured plan as of January 1st of 2019. And then it's wide open for everyone to start them on the self-funded side or for fully insured on April 1st. Other things that are considerations, things that people bring up, you know, will these just be plans without very good benefits? I would say that most of the association plans, the legitimate ones that are out there today, do have, you know, comprehensive coverage. But if you think of this in the way self-insured plans operate, they aren't exempt from all the ACA requirements. They're just exempt from some of the things that small employers have to do. They don't have to do modified community rating. They still have to meet some benefits requirements if any of the benefits that they offer is and essential benefits, and they have to meet all the requirements associated with that. So they really have to do most of the things that others have to do, with the exception of modified community rating and the exact essential benefits schedule. So most of them do offer comprehensive coverage. We don't really have any reason to believe that, but they could offer a lesser coverage if they wanted to.
What about people who are already enrolled in AHPs under the old rules?
This is one of the most interesting things, and I mentioned this starting off, but I really want to expand on it a little bit. In our comments, when we were commenting on this, we asked for these plans that were already effectively operating and offering a good value. Many of our members work with these plans. We asked that they be grandfathered. We actually got more than what we asked for. So the plans that are already in existence today are not only grandfathered, but what's grandfathered is not just the plan itself, but the rule itself. So the old rule is remains in place exactly the way it was before. And this new rule is just an extra way, a little bit easier way for these AHPs to be formed. But the old rule still could come into play. And so all the things that if an association is operating under the old rules, all the things that they could do under the old rules, they can continue to do. But all the things that they had to do under the old rules, they still have to do as well. And then the other thing that's even more interesting that was really reiterated two or three times in the final rule is that not only are we creating this additional pathway, but the old pathway is preserved for even a brand new AHP to go in and use that pathway instead if they wanted to. So they could choose this new way, or if they wanted to do it the old way, they could do that as well. So the idea is to create more opportunities, not to replace the ones that were already there.
What are some items that NAHU specifically requested in the comments that we submitted back in March to the proposed rule, and what was their status in the final rule?
Well, I have to say that we submitted some pretty thoughtful comments, and virtually everything that we requested clarification on in our comments was clarified in the final rule. So a lot of definitions, what types of things were allowed. There were a lot of examples given that were extremely helpful. So we got all of that. I will tell you that we also had, in addition to our official comments, we had a phone call with the people who were writing the regulation to talk with them about why some of our concerns existed, specifically some examples of what we did not want to happen as a result of this. And those were also addressed in the rule, some of the concerns that we had, and some provisions were put into place to keep some of those concerns from happening. We also were very, very clear on how important it was for the state regulators who are on the ground there able to monitor what's going on a state level to continue to have the involvement that they have. And that was also continued as we requested. And then the third thing is we asked for some special consideration, or we have had a concern about working owners or the self-employed people and adverse selection, whether or not the adverse selection that we see today in the individual market would just come into these AHPs for employers, because now the working owners would be allowed to come in. And we were concerned that they would actually, you know, cause the AHP to experience adverse selection and cause it to be a bad risk for people instead of a place that would offer better coverage. And so we had asked whether there would be a possibility of having special enrollment periods for people who were working owners. And what the final rule did is it didn't make that mandatory, but it did make it permissive that an AHP could be set up with special enrollment periods and that type of thing. So we were pleased with that. That was what we had wanted. And so we really got all of the things that we had asked for the most part.
What are some of the remaining concerns that NAHU has with the rule as finalized?
Well, of course, we want this to be an opportunity for our members, not a burden on our members. We don't want it to do anything that would hurt the market that is already there. There's always a question about whether somehow one of these plans could be structured to pull away the good risks and whether that would taint some of the existing products where people are placing their business. You always worry about whether the rules will be manipulated, whether people will figure out how to get around them. There are quite a few provisions, I have to say, in there that really tighten this whole issue of bona fide associations. They require employer control on boards and a lot of the type of infrastructure that we see even inside our own association with our board of trustees and that type of thing. Those are the types of structures that have to be in place. So a lot of on the ground involvement. So we think that'll be all right, but we do worry whether somehow we don't think brokers would be shut out from most associations. Most of them want people to come in. And so for the same reasons why insurance carriers use brokers, that's why an AHP would. But there's nothing to preclude an AHP from being formed by a specific broker or a specific agency that might not allow other outside brokers to place business in it. That's something that we are concerned about. And we are concerned that we want states to respond on this, to clarify, you know, how they will be regulating these new entities, not to just to do nothing, but to actually actively look at whether or not there is additional things that need to be done at the state level in order to ensure that this is a safe place for people to purchase coverage.
What is the status on the other items that were prompted by President Trump's executive order last October regarding short-term plans and health reimbursement arrangements.
We've submitted comments on these and we're waiting for the final rules to come out. Some of our concerns in those, just really briefly, on the short-term limited duration coverage, what they had suggested doing was pretty broad and really ended up changing the Obama-era rule that limited coverage to 90 days to 12 months with a chance to renew, which is pretty long for short-term coverage. So we're concerned about what they might actually do with that. And on the HRA side, I think that what their tendency to do on that is, from based on the conversations we've had, is to kind of look at the CUSERA HRAs that came out at the end of 2016 and maybe expand what's done there to any kind of an HRA. But we'll see what the final rules say.
Beyond the STP and HRA rules, what else is on tap with the administration?
I'm just going to focus that remark, I think, on HHS because that's kind of what I'm the most excited about right now. They're really starting to look aggressively at prescription drug cost issues and overall cost of care issues. And they're not treating it passively. They're really looking at aggressively at what could be done to bring down the cost of care. And at NEHU, we've been talking for years about, you know, the health insurance is expensive because health care is expensive. So we're really excited to see some real effort behind that and not just so much lip service to it. There has been some discussion the congressional level of some new repeal efforts, but it doesn't seem to be getting much steam, and this is an election year, so I doubt much will happen there. So I think what we'll be seeing this year is some action on prescription drugs from the administration, and I think they'll take some action on cost of care issues. Those things might occur through Medicare first, but I think they're doing some things through the FDA that might affect all of us pretty quickly.
NEHU will be holding its 88th annual convention this coming weekend. What are we toasting to on the NEHU Healthcare Happy Hour as we head into the weekend and NEHU members from across the country join us in Kansas City?
Well, we are looking forward to seeing many of our members in Kansas City. So I guess I'd like to toast to all of you who will be there and just wish the rest of you a safe and happy weekend as we move into the summer.
Cheers!
Thank you for joining us for this week's installment of the NEHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. For more information on NEHU's government affairs efforts, or to join as a member of NEHU, visit nehu.org.